This person definitely did not understand what a Satoshi was.
When you were asking, what are they going to do with all this Bitcoin? They're going to sell it to people like Jeff Bezos.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Bada bing, bada boom. You never have to deal with the fiat world again.
Like, I believe in Bitcoin. I do, but I don't think I'm a Bitcoiner.
The concept of retiring is a fiat idea.
And then I logged into Noster and talked about it. It's Mandana.
And Ian.
Welcome to Flirting with Bitcoin.
Season 3.
That's right. 3 years ago, I tricked Ian into a weekly date night.
I let you trick me so I could teach you about Bitcoin.
Well, it worked. I'm very excited for the halving.
You should be. Bitcoin's about to do what Bitcoin's about to do.
Ooh, okay then. Kian, can we start the show?
Okay.
Let's go.
Hey, Ian.
Hey, Mandana.
I have an idea for today.
Ooh, what's that?
I think you should ask me questions.
About what?
About my Bitcoin journey.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like just Bitcoin stuff in general. Like, well, pop what, quiz.
I mean, look, I'm...
What's the mempool?
I'm curious to see like what constitutes like growth as a Bitcoiner. Obviously, you don't think I'm a Bitcoiner yet. What are you looking for in my journey? And I'll find that out with your questions today.
I like how somehow this turned into me having homework.
It's not homework, babe. This is a pop quiz.
Yeah, I'm getting a pop quiz on questions I should ask.
As an orange pillar, right?
Mm-hmm.
A pillar. Yeah. Maybe that's going to be like a Bitcoin thing.
Yeah, that could be some merch.
Bitcoin pillars.
That could be some merch. I'll get somebody on that.
Focus, though. Look at you just trying to get out of your test.
No. I'm good on that. But I just saw it in my head when you said orange pillar. I heard orange pillar, yeah. Not pillar. So I could see some cool memes coming.
There's
out
something
of that.
There.
Yeah. But before we get into that,
let's say hello to our listeners. Hola, Spain.
Namaskar, Nepal.
Guten Tag, Germany.
Hola, Brazil.
Sawadee, Thailand.
G'day, UK.
G'day, Canada.
Hola, Argentina.
Buongiorno, Italy.
Namaste, Bharat.
Kamusta, Philippines.
Bonjour, France.
Hola, Portugal.
Hello, Indonesia.
Hello, Netherlands.
Konnichiwa, Japan.
Witam, Poland.
Zadrivet, Bulgaria.
Hola, Venezuela.
G'day, Australia.
Hola, Mexico.
What's up, Nigeria?
And howdy to Texas. And hi to everyone else who's listening out there in this big old crazy world. What time is it, babe?
The current time is 836-301, and we're approximately 2,188 blocks from our last recording. And we are less than 4,000 blocks away from the halving.
Ooh, when is it again?
The exact date?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I know it's 3,699 blocks away.
You got me there.
But no, it's less than 30 days.
Mm.
Less than 30 days. Some people are saying it's the 20th. Some people are saying it's going to be the 17th.
It's going to happen. Is it like Y2K?
No, Bitcoin doesn't care what day it falls on.
Mm-hmm.
So
I know, but I mean like people thinking like the world will never be the same.
I just think it'd be a very cool thing to happen for the halving that basically pushes Bitcoin out of reach for a lot of people. I don't say cool, but it'll be interesting if the halving that pushes Bitcoin out of reach for a lot of people falls on 420. Everyone's going to think it's like some stoner thing that's going on and people are going to pay even less attention to Bitcoin. I think it's going to be sooner than the 20th. A lot of new hash rate has come online since we hit the all-time high last time. So that's speeding up the blocks.
Ah, interesting. Yeah. Bitcoin tells you, don't try to plan anything short-term with me. You cannot rely on me. But just trust me, baby.
Well, this is like an interesting part about Bitcoin, just real quick. Again, Bitcoin doesn't care. The reason why it's moving faster is because of human action. People are turning on miners because they want to get in on the last like 30 or 60 days of mining before you get less Bitcoin for mining. So as everyone turns back on these machines that they turned off basically from the last all-time high, the blocks start coming in faster. The Bitcoin network adjusts to try to tone it down to keep it around 10 minutes. But I think we're probably going to be like sub 10 minutes for the next 30 days. So
I just thought of a TV show for the next halving. It would be like a 1 year long competition leading up to the next halving where project managers engineers, like stay-at-home moms, they all are like, I can set up the best mining company, and I can like beat the race to the Bitcoin halving.
So you just described capitalism?
Yes, but it's a reality show where, well, like,
reality shows are not capitalism, right? The making of the show is capitalism. Yeah. The things that take place inside of it are not capitalism.
But like, I would watch that show and I would want it to be real. I wouldn't want it to be like a Netflix movie about it. I would want to see people.
I mean, I guess
doing everything they needed to do to get the last of Bitcoin that's out there. Because after the next halving, it's how many?
So this one goes from 6 to 3. The next one is from 3 to 1.5.
I feel like that's going to really shake the world if this one doesn't.
They're all shaking the world. It's just a larger percentage of people in the world that they shake every time. It'll matter more how much adoption we get in the next 4 years.
But, you know, no matter what, like, we just know the trajectory of reality television. That will be a reality show.
I'm sorry.
But one day. Maybe 15 years from now.
I'm sorry, but I highly disagree with that.
Well, maybe not a year-long competition. Maybe, like, a month-long. They get unlimited resources.
No, I disagree because only network, like, cable and whatever makes reality TV.
Mm-hmm.
Fundamentally, there's no real reality shows on YouTube, right? Like, there's people, but they're not reality shows.
It's not a camera crew following around.
So what I would argue is that what you're asking for already exists. These mining companies, for the most part, are very transparent. And you can see all the things that they're doing. They go to all the conferences. They show all the cool stuff they're building. Well, right?
Perfect. It can just be a documentary.
Yeah.
Real time.
And I'm...
What's wrong with that?
Nothing.
You know, when I said reality TV, I think I really meant real time. I want it to be real time.
So you want, like, them all on Twitch?
Yes.
Because you just discovered Twitch recently.
Yes, I did. But I also want to, like, I want to see their meetings where they talk through their different strategies and where they're like, no, this is going to get us the highest return. And, oh, this miner just closed. So let's, like, let's go buy their stuff, get it at a discount. Like, why do I care so much? But I care so much because there's so much at stake.
I don't want us to go too far on a tangent on this, but this will be part of the questions that I ask about your journey.
Look at that little teaser.
But moving on with the opening of our show.
If I gave you $1, how many acres could I get on sunny Bitcoin Island?
Today, you could get 1,425 acres, aka Satoshis, for $1.
And what about other things like eggs, beef, gas?
Yeah, so the Satoshi price index is actually down 1.89% since our last recording, which means if you're a Bitcoiner, things got cheaper for you again. Pretty much every episode we've recorded this year so far for season 3, things have gotten cheaper for you.
They have.
This is what a bull run is, right? Eggs are 4,500 Satoshis. Beef is 4,800 Satoshis. Gas is 3,300 Satoshis. Cheese, instead of milk, is 2,200 Satoshis. An ounce of gold costs you 2.8 million Satoshis. And the median price for a new home in America, 6.2 Bitcoin.
All right.
What do you think that's going to be after the halving?
I don't know. I feel like a lot is being promised.
So just hold that thought.
Mm-hmm.
When we say everything is getting cheaper, a new house is 6 Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You can buy a house in the United States, the median price of a house, for 6 Bitcoin.
6 magical little internet coins.
12 years ago, people were getting those people were getting 50 of those every 10 minutes. Like, that's what Bitcoin does. Like, now, not everybody for 12 years ago has their Bitcoin.
I hear you. But I know. It's not that I don't believe it.
I know.
What is it then?
We'll find out.
Babe, I love my new hat.
Which hat?
My new Flirting with Bitcoin hat.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty slick.
It's so slick. So it's not actually, it doesn't like say Flirting with Bitcoin on it. But we designed it. It's official pod merchandise in our merchandise store. It is a white, it's called Dad Cap, and I have white embroidered lettering that say beach, but the B is the Bitcoin B, so it's orange. It's so cute. I love it. I'm going to wear it all summer.
Yeah, it was pretty, like, pretty impressive. Like, I was surprised at how that came out.
Thank you.
A lot of times white on white, you know, like it just doesn't work if you do it the way that we did it, but they actually got it.
So good. I'm not just saying that. Like, I'm so excited to wear this hat everywhere I go. And I even showed it to some of my friends and they were like, that's cute. I'd wear it.
Got him.
Yeah. So anyways, I'm so excited for our merch store. You guys have to check it out. It's store.flirtingwithbitcoin.com. And we have spent a lot of time and given a lot of thought and we have a lot of other stuff coming out. We're going to try to push it as often as we can, but we really want to take our time and make things that you guys will, you know, like wearing and using.
Yeah. Also, the merch store is a drop shipping website that we're using. So we can actually make like a lot of cool things. Mm-hmm. Like it's not just shirts and hats. Like we can do all kinds of stuff. So we just got to find the time to make some cool swag.
Yeah. And of course, the idea is that someone will ask you like, hey, what does that mean? And, you know, you can also start that conversation with them. But we got to make a shout out for our special edition season 3 shirt. It says, are you flirting with Bitcoin on the front? And on the back, it features all 3 seasons of the show. And there's actually a little barcode in the corner that someone could scan and it would take them to our website where they can learn more about Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's pretty slick. It's the first merch store I've actually like gotten into full production. So,
babe, this is what, you know, what commitment can bring you. Finished projects. But the really cool thing is that the shirt is called The Pickup Artist. So it's a conversation starter. The idea is that our clothes will catch people's interest. You'll maybe stand out a little. And so, yeah, like check out our stuff. And if there's a design that you would want on a different product, like let us know. We can totally make it happen. It's a great way to support the show. Or, of course, you can always send us Bitcoin. And if you can't do that, at least, you know, stay connected with us.
You could hit us up on our Telegram group. We have t.me/flirtingwithbitcoin. You can hit us up on Twitter, flirtingwithBTC. You can hit me up on Twitter as Onesien. That's Onesien. You can hit us up on Instagram because that's a thing, flirtingwithbitcoin. You can hit us up on Noster. Link will be in the description of the show. And you can hit us up on the actual website, which is www.flirtingwithbitcoin.com. Apparently, you need the www.
Apparently. And I will tell you, I am the Instagram person, but Instagram never shows me your messages. So I am not ever going to ignore you intentionally. I just wanted to put that out there.
Okay.
That dang Meta. They don't want us to win.
They don't. If you win, Mark can't build his $250,000 bunker or $250 million bunker in Hawaii. What does he know?
On that note.
So that was for the, I know our audience, some of them. I know what our audience likes. But today's episode is about your Bitcoin journey, apparently.
I've decided.
And oh, look, you've even written some questions for me to ask you. How convenient. All right.
Yeah, so was this homework for you or me? Or was this teamwork?
I'm just going to say these questions are good. I'll see what I choose to ask.
Of course, yeah. I just wanted to steer your brain to different areas of interest.
What I'm interested most to know is, do you think you're a Bitcoiner?
I think to non-Bitcoiners, I am a Bitcoiner.
Mm.
Yeah, but I do not think I'm a Bitcoiner. But actually, not all non-Bitcoiners think I'm a Bitcoiner because I'm a woman.
What?
I feel it. I feel that people think that I just know it because of my husband. And like my opinion is it's my husband. And they think like, oh, it's my husband's opinion. I don't think that they think I've thought for myself.
Who are these people?
You know, I'm not saying that it's very obvious or they even realize it, but it's a bias that I see in them. Mm. Yeah, it's a bias that I see and I feel. I mean, I don't think it's intentional and I don't think they don't respect me or any of those things, but there's still this bias or belief or stereotype or truth that it's mostly men in Bitcoin.
I mean.
Right?
I mean, it's true.
Yeah, it is true.
Unless all the women are quiet.
There isn't like a real, I don't feel like there's really a space for me, even on Nostra, like to put what, like what I'm going to put out there. I don't feel like I see myself in any of the people that I see on Nostra. So I definitely feel like an outsider just because of who I am in the Bitcoin community. So yeah, I think it's going to take some time for me to actually feel like a Bitcoiner, let alone like have other Bitcoiners think I'm a Bitcoiner. But I do think some people out there look at me and they're like, oh, she's a Bitcoiner. It's like a really roundabout response, but
I'm trying not to react a certain way to what you're saying.
What way?
I don't necessarily agree that you're not like part of the community. I think you're not a part of the community that's like the part that I pay attention to, such as like, you know, 100 push-ups till 100K and, you know, what pan do you cook your steak in or whatever, right?
Like, hey, I'm on that side of TikTok, the steak one I am.
Okay, fine, right? But
we got a lot of steaks in that freezer.
I think the reason why you don't see yourself in the community, I guess the way that I see myself in the community, is that I think part of the community is actually about not fitting in, right? Like you just come as who you are and you fit in because you're a Bitcoiner. And if you're a Bitcoiner that, in your case, for example, celebrates Nowruz, cool. What's Nowruz? I've never heard of that. The way that social media kind of programmed us before Nostra and technically before Bitcoin is there's pop culture and then there's all these like subculture. And I think that in the Bitcoin space, it's more like, no, everyone's an individual. No one should be isolated because of one thing or another. That's just like their thing. And it's a very subtle difference, but I feel it all the time. Like I see all this stuff on Nostra or Bitcoin Twitter that I'm just like, I've only encountered this information or this idea over here. And I don't know what it is, but I'm going to look into it because this is a Bitcoiner who's talking about it, right? Like the thing I saw the other, like last year that was like super interesting. There's like these books in Korea that are like some of the oldest books in the world. And they're like etched into wood. And there's like a monastery that like been taking care of these books for like thousands of years. I thought I knew all the cool old stuff that was going on in the world. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. That was just like someone sharing something that they thought was interesting. I think the Bitcoin space just has a lot of people that are doing that. Whereas in the other kind of social media spaces, it's like because of the way the platform is designed, you kind of get funneled into what you've identified that you like. You don't really get exposed to other things. That's why I think Nostra goes better with Bitcoin than any other social media platform.
So interesting, because what you just described is TikTok to me.
Yeah, but that's not TikTok, because you know at the end of the day, there's a company still deciding what you can see.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But it's, this is
Nostra and TikTok are not the same, but how you were describing the things that you learn on there and the way that people treat each other. I'm on a very nice side of TikTok, like a very nice, very polite, very kind side of TikTok. It's kind of like the best of people. So I mean, I guess that's my algorithm. I don't know what other parts of TikTok are like. But that is, yeah, like what you were describing is how I feel about TikTok.
I guess the problem with TikTok is like, you don't actually know if what you're seeing is what you want to see.
Maybe. And like also what I was thinking is, you know, you've been on Nostra for a while and also you were on Twitter before. You're still on Twitter, whereas I've never used Twitter. So I think there's like a really big learning curve for me when it comes to Nostra. And that's where I've been really dipping my toes in like the Bitcoin world.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. And so like there's also that happening for me where I'm just like, I don't understand. People are just saying things, like making declarative statements all day long.
You want to know something funny to just put a perfect picture in that? Was it yesterday or 2 days ago? I got a thing when I logged in that was like, do you want to post your like 15th anniversary? I've been on Twitter for 15 years.
Oh, I was like, what?
It was like, I've been on Twitter for 15 years.
I've been on Instagram probably that long.
So like, I know how
hurt.
Twitter works.
My heart. Oof.
I know how Nostra is initially was just to replace that type of media. And now it's spreading out. But I just thought that was interesting. Like, yeah, I definitely know how that culture works.
You do. And I don't get it. And like, I'll try to post something, but I want to show Ian first. And I used to be very good at the internet, but I don't know anymore.
Maybe you can get back into being good at social media for the pod if you can retire early. So what's
up? Oh, is that the reason to retire? To focus on social media?
To focus on growing the podcast. Yes, social media is one part of it.
That's fair.
Like,
but I'm like, social media is the worst part of it. Yeah. Ain't that the dream? Retirement for me would mean no working, but I see what you're saying.
I was talking to my buddy the other day, and we both agreed that retirement is fiat.
Really?
Yeah.
But then if you're working somewhere and they pay you Bitcoin...
No. The concept of retiring
is a
fiat idea.
Elaborate.
Well, this is your Bitcoin journey episode, and I don't want to hijack it. But all I wanted to say is that, like, retirement is fiat. You're always going to be working. It's just that something different. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, when you're in retirement, you're still working on your life. Like, you're not doing nothing. You have to wake up and live and be a human, right? Okay. So, like, even that is work. Retirement is just this, like, myth that has been sold to people so that they'll work for 30 years so that they can have that period of time in their life where they're going to do nothing. And they're like, that's not true. You still have to run your life. Mm-hmm. You still got bills to pay. You still got doctor's appointments, right? So, like, we were talking about, you know, we play that game Crusader King. And I was like, yeah, Crusader King's got me thinking, like, there's no retirement when you're a king. You die. That's retirement. Because then, you know, Crusader King.
You're a workaholic. Like,
you're not a work. Doesn't matter. If you're a peasant in the fields, you're still working. Everybody has to work. You can't not work. Only thing you control is what you're working on. So when I say retire early, I'm just saying retire from the fiat world early. And come to the Bitcoin world and start building and growing over here, because it's always retirement if you're working on what you want to work on.
Sounds like another way to get me to work.
I'm trying to get you to work on what you want to work on.
A little scammy.
You can, like, work on Kion.
Baby. You can Kion. Oh, you can be a caregiver.
You can work on cooking.
You can be a laborer. Yes.
You're going to do it one way or another.
I am. I'm doing it anyways. All right. Well, that's an interesting mindset shift. I'll think about it.
I was just bringing that concept up to drive home the point of, like, so what's going on with your retirement?
Mm-hmm.
I know we've been trying to get you to go over to Unchained for at least season two.
So I reached out to Unchained and I started the process of moving my retirement over. So I made the decision to do it. And I'm a little set it and forget it with my retirement, but when I signed up with Unchained, they didn't really have a place to be able to sign up for their services. You have to do this consultant meeting and you have to find a schedule, and it's during the week and they don't have appointments the same day. So it took, like, I don't know how many days, 5 days to get, like, a call with them. And I had the call with the guy and, like, it was fine. I don't know if I somehow sold myself to be more knowledgeable than I am. I did say I have a podcast, and I said that, like, you know, my husband's talked about Unchained a lot and that we recommend this service to our listeners. And I'd love to, you know, move my retirement into Bitcoin and then be able to talk about it on my pod. And he was very, like, okay, which I get, like, I feel like after the call I told you, I was like, do a lot of people say that to him? Because he seemed unfazed by that, like, completely uninterested in it.
You can't do anything with that information.
You know, I thought he would maybe ask more questions about, like, well, what questions, what don't you understand this or that? But it seemed like it was, like, going through a script.
Yeah. Yeah. He's fielding calls.
Yeah. I don't know if it was miscommunication, but basically what was explained to me as what I had to do was not what I had to do. I thought I only had to open up one account. I had to open up two. And there's just a lot of different technicalities that I do not want to go into the details of. But basically, like, it's been 2 weeks and I still haven't been able to pull the trigger. And, like Ian was saying, I'm working in fiat. Like, you're still working in fiat when it's your retirement. If I had just cashed out, then my money would be actually free. But I'm not free. And so I was, like, dealing with this fiat company that I thought was going to be a Bitcoin company, but I felt like I was having fiat problems.
Unchained doesn't actually control the retirement account. They're an interface to someone who's going to be legally able to hold this money. That's the fiat world. You're dealing with a new company, but they still have a fiat back end to a certain extent.
Yeah, right? And I felt it.
And I'm saying this to you, but also to the listeners, like, this is the problem that we're going to have for a while. A lot of these people that are trying to do new things, they still have to do it with something old.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the legacy system, the fiat world, like, keeps clawing some level of control away from Bitcoin. You know, what you were saying about, like, cashing out, like, just a quick little note for the listeners, if you want to know about Unchained, they can open up a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA. This is not financial advice. I'm just pointing out what I said to Mandana a little more clearly, which is if you have a Roth IRA, it's probably worth it to cash it out, pay the taxes on it, and then just buy Bitcoin. Because as she just said, like, your money is then free, right? You never have to deal with the fiat world again.
Yeah.
But with your traditional accounts, because of the way they've set those up, and you haven't paid any tax on that money, if you were to cash out your traditional accounts, you would be paying a lot of money in taxes and penalties and stuff like that. So that's where we are right now in, like, Bitcoin retirement accounts. There's also, like, this other type of account that you could have that Unchained doesn't do. But when you're dealing with Unchained, fundamentally, you're still dealing with a Fidelity because they're just an interface to whatever legal entity is going to hold your money.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't want to go through my whole experience, but
no,
I
just wanted to clarify.
No, definitely. But I was very frustrated by it, but they're the only option. And also, like, whatever, who cares? They're still getting it done. They're being responsive, whatever. I was frustrated when you were like, no, these are the only people that you have this option to do this with.
That is, like, one of the problems. If you want to maintain the benefits that you've had with these retirement accounts and not get penalized, Unchained does offer a product that you can move that money into Bitcoin, but it still has to fall under all the old rules. Instead of in dollars, it's now in Bitcoin.
Yeah. You know, it's...
But I get it.
Yeah.
Like, So my account with Unchained is not a retirement account, number one. And my account with Unchained, I opened years ago, which apparently now they're even charging. They would charge me today to open the type of account that I opened in the past that I didn't pay for. So, like...
Your grandfathered in?
I must be. They've never... They don't have any cards on file. So, like... But the point is that, like, Unchained, as Maldita said, is, like, one of the only ones that you can do this with, if not the only one.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, you're just buying the ETF. The ETF is not real Bitcoin. It's an IOU. You don't get the Bitcoin. You only get to ride the wave, but mm-hmm. you don't actually have the Bitcoin. Unchained is the only company that you can have Bitcoin on the blockchain that you can validate that only you have and no one else owns it.
And then when you're eligible for retirement, you just get it all.
Fundamentally, yes. You know, I don't know anybody who's retired with Bitcoin. In a traditional, like, we don't know this person yet.
Yeah, you're totally right.
We should ask Unchained if they have, like, have they actually had, like, somebody who was, like, 69 and, like, retired with a Bitcoin account. Like, I don't know.
That's,
like,
a great question, and I'm going to totally ask it.
Yeah, you should.
I'm going to. So, yeah, that's where I am with my retirement.
Just for the record, like, I'm also frustrated along with you.
Thank you for validating my feelings. I thought that you thought I was being a brat.
No, I'm frustrated with you. I was getting frustrated at the fact that it was not going smoothly for you.
Mm-hmm. Why? You thought it was going to make me change my mind?
Well, I'm sure if it had gone smoother, you would be, for lack of a better term, closer to being a Bitcoiner, right?
And that's all you want?
Well, I mean,
Ian's dream come true.
The further down the rabbit hole I go, the more I would answer that question in the affirmative. I think that has a certain connotation to you right now, and that has a very different connotation to me. So my answer is yes, but not for the reasons that you're probably thinking. But that being said, like, you get what Unchained does, right? Like, even if it didn't go smoothly, like, you did set up keys.
Yes, right? I do understand it better now. I did not understand it that well. You know, my beef is those, like, 15 whatever minute consult calls.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they should just have a better website than that. Because I think they could have explained more in writing.
Yeah, you're one of the rare people that reads things, though.
I am someone who reads things, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's, I guess that's just how my brain works.
Also, you know a lot.
I right? know a lot, but I will say the vault stuff. With Unchained, there's like a service fee for each retirement fund, but also there's a, like a customer service add-on fee that you can have if they help you set up your vault. And I was like, no, my husband can do it. But that process was confusing for me.
Setting up the vault?
Yeah.
When I walked you through it, that was confusing?
I wouldn't have been able to have done that on my own. Maybe. I don't know. I didn't even try. Honestly, now that I'm thinking about it. I don't know. Maybe you're standing in my way of being a real Bitcoiner.
That's one way of framing it. Sure.
No. I take it completely back. But yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe I should do some things for myself like that.
That is a Bitcoiner statement.
Oh, well, excuse me.
The taking responsibility for getting something done. Starting an account with Unchained and opening a vault with them is like something that you actually wanted to do. Like you're like, I'm getting this done. You would have figured it out. Mm-hmm. You probably didn't need to talk to anybody. I mean, I know how to do it because I've done it a bunch. But if you actually read what was there, like it's very straightforward. I think the hardest thing for you was actually setting up the cold cards. That would have been probably more challenging. But also that's mm-hmm. like pretty straightforward also. Mm-hmm. If you just read what's in the cold card.
Yep.
So like this is why I think the consultation call is there, because there's a lot of people who have never done the cold card, don't live with a person who's done the cold card, have never worked with keys, have never done any of these things mm-hmm. really like that. They're at best moving their Coinbase money to Unchained, if that's what's happening, right? And so like they have to kind of like talk, because they don't know what you know. So they don't know what to write to read.
Yeah.
So you need a human to like interact.
Yeah, him and I talked about that.
Yeah. So that's really where they are. Like I think a lot of other services, everyone can assume you have a certain level of knowledge if you're a certain person in the world. But I think when it comes to Bitcoin, it's almost like we got to assume that they don't know anything.
Mm.
Not trying to like let Unchained off the hook. Like I wish it was a lot simpler for you than it was. And I wish the process had gone smoother. But I think what you experienced shows like where we are with Bitcoin, which is it's hard to have a Bitcoin only company because you don't really know what your customers know. Like what copy do you put on a website? What marketing pitch do you do? If your marketing is directly to Bitcoiners, that's established. But they're marketing to people that are like, I just want to move a retirement account because my grandson told me to do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I really didn't think that they have clients that don't know what Bitcoin is.
Again, I'm sure it's a small percentage, mm-hmm. but I know that there are grandkids out there orange pilling grandpa and are just basically being like, grandpa, it's still a retirement account. Move it into Bitcoin, right?
I hope so.
So it's happening. Like if the kid's getting all the way to Unchained, all that fun stuff. But the point is that they are getting people that don't know much, but do know, well, it's still technically legacy. So if I sign some paperwork and click some buttons, you'll take care of the rest. And Unchained's like, yeah, we'll take care of the rest. Whatever we can, we will take care of the rest. But there is one thing we can't do for you, which is set up these wallets and hold these keys because that defeats the whole purpose.
Fair enough.
But yeah, so now that you've done that, and in theory, you'll have an account and you'll have some Bitcoin on Unchained. And I know you understand like on-chain Bitcoin versus, you know, exchanges and stuff like that. But now do you see why, and I'm not saying you didn't see, but like now do you see why the ETFs are so attractive? You could already be in the ETF in your retirement account. You don't have to move your money at all.
Yeah, it's just a click of a button.
It's literally just like sell Tesla, buy iBit. It's that simple.
Yeah.
And what you're going through is the friction that keeps people being like, but I kind of have Bitcoin. Let me just get the ETF. It's like, yeah, that's what they want. They want you to take that convenience route and they'll hold all the Bitcoin for you and you'll never see it. You'll never see it. But they'll like tell you that you have it.
Yeah.
You have a right to it until the whole thing blows up. And then it's like massive rug pull.
Well, there's got to be some magic number that they're going to float around to say, oh, the highest it'll ever go is 250. So once it hits 250, everyone sells.
That is probable. But I would argue that the people that are starting these funds, they don't necessarily want anyone to sell either because they make money on the value of the its assets under management, right? So if they have, you know, one Bitcoin today and it's worth $100,000, they get a percentage of $100,000. The value of that Bitcoin goes to $200,000, they get a percentage of $200,000. If you have selling going on in there and pushing the price back down, it's like, you're messing up my average. I just want this to go parabolic.
Yeah.
So if you want to sell at 250, by all means, like, you don't
so
even.
So who is it hurting?
What?
The ETF.
The ETF is the legacy financial system trying to do to Bitcoin what they did to gold.
Hoard it all.
They have been manipulating the price of gold for easily the last 30 years. No one actually knows the true price of gold. It's not a knowable thing. Bitcoin is new price discovery. And so the Bitcoin price is saying, well, if there's no one manipulating the price, or if no one can continually manipulate the price, it will eventually find its actual market value. With the ETFs, it's manipulating the price, in my opinion, it's manipulating the price in the other way. So they're going to gobble it all up, and then there'll be nothing for sale. Well, then what's the price of something that's not for sale? If they know they're never going to sell, that means the only people that will sell are people like you and me. And when we sell, it will eventually end up in the ETF. Just like with the gold, they are trying to have as much of the Bitcoin as possible. The difference is they are so behind.
But what are they going to do when they have all this Bitcoin?
What do they do with all of the other stuff that they own? They just have it.
It's weird.
It's not weird. if you think of Earth as a closed system, as a zero-sum game, inevitably you're going to get people that want to have it all.
You can't spend it.
Spend what?
The ETF, the Bitcoins that are held in the ETF.
As a person who owns shares of the ETF, no, you cannot spend it. The person who actually, or the entity that actually controls the Bitcoin, they can do all kinds of stuff with it.
What, like lend against it?
Lend against it, borrow against it.
Borrow, yeah.
They can, because they over time will have a history of its performance, they can actually, like for example, you know, we talk about Bitcoin hits a certain number, I can stop working. Bitcoin hits a certain number, you can stop working. Well, it's not that we're going to stop working. It's that we can do what we want to do because this thing is going to literally appreciate at a rate we won't be able to spend it all. These entities, the Michael Saylor, MicroStrategies, owning 1% of all the Bitcoin, BlackRock and all these ETFs have about, I think it's like 5% of all the Bitcoin. They are used to having 80 to 90% of stuff. That's how they control everything. They are behind right now. The majority of the Bitcoin is in the hands of people like you and me.
I thought it's in Michael Saylor's hands.
He has 1%.
That's a lot.
What are you talking about? Like,
the rest, just regular schmoes like you and me?
Remember when I said earlier in the show that people were getting 50 Bitcoin?
Yeah, that's true.
Every 10 minutes?
That's true.
Okay. These ETF guys are coming into a world where there's only 6 Bitcoin every 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Now, you can argue that maybe they were buying it up until this point, but as more information is coming out, it seems like that's not true. It seems like they were caught flat-footed and realized, oh, we need to get in this as fast as possible, because if we don't, we're going to go into it in the world where there's only 3 Bitcoin every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So they want to be in the position that they're normally in.
This is very dramatic. You know, it's as if someone wrote it.
This is just human nature. You have a group of people that have been in power for at least 100 years. Like generationally been in power. Mm-hmm. And if you do some rabbit hole conspiracy theory digging.
Let's do some digging.
I'll just give like a really quick example. You know, we were talking the other night about the pirates. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
Okay. The Pirates of the Caribbean, not the movie, but the actual pirates in the Caribbean. Forget all the like dramatization of it. Fundamentally, what they were doing is that they were stealing gold from the British crown. Like that's what they were doing. Now, murder, pillaging, all that fun stuff. At the end of the day, they were stealing gold from the British crown. So the British crown gets together and goes, we got to do something about these pirates. They offered them all a pardon. They said, if you stop being pirates, you can keep everything you took. But if you go pirating again, you know, it's all heck's going to break loose. So a lot of those pirates took the deal and actually settled in the United States, specifically in New England. But pretty much most major seaports along the East Coast, Ocean City, Wilmington, Virginia Beach, Myrtle Beach, Savannah, Charleston, these major cities, received this major influx of these pirates that had stolen all this gold. And conspiracy theory kind of just brings you to the point to say, like, it was really the pirates who started the American Revolution, right? They had already been fighting the king. They then went and lived amongst a bunch of people that were kind of not trying to fight the king, but at the same time, they were kind of getting mad about what the king was doing. So they got a couple more people to their side. Boom, you got a revolution.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Bada bing, bada boom, right?
That easy.
So the conspiracy theory is that confiscation of all the gold by Franklin Delano Roosevelt was the day that the British crown took the gold back.
Because Roosevelt was a Brit.
Roosevelt has ties to like European old money aristocracy.
Mm.
So like the conspiracy theory is that the Europeans seized all of America's gold as a reprisal from some boat hijackings in the 1600s. Okay, fine. But when you say like, why would they do this? Well, in this Bitcoin world, they don't already have everything. The pirates aren't stealing from them. They're trying to steal from the pirates.
You think you're the pirate?
I think that the Bitcoiners are the pirates.
I don't think I'm a pirate.
Okay, well, sorry. Let me rephrase that. The Bitcoiners are the people that have the stuff now. The old aristocracy, the people that seize the gold in this conspiracy theory, right? The people that have been basically in charge for the last 100 years or more, they don't have the majority of the Bitcoin.
You know, I wonder like how much of that is actually true though. I wonder how many wealthy people are just being very quiet right now.
I'm sure that there is more than two wealthy people that are being very quiet, but there's also very wealthy people like the Prince of Serbia or whatever, who's like, no, I talked to these people. They don't know what's going on.
Mm. So does Jeff Bezos have maybe Bitcoin now?
We don't know. But
definitely didn't 10 years ago, right? Because he don't talk about Bitcoin.
The point is that 10 years ago, he was running Amazon. And Amazon was the hottest stock in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have to worry about something like Bitcoin because he was just borrowing against his stock that was rapidly appreciating. And he was becoming the richest man in the world. Now, today, with what's going on, it's not so much that Jeff Bezos is going to wake up broke tomorrow, but he does want to hold on to what he's built. He doesn't want to wake up tomorrow and realize that whatever $100 billion in cash that he has is only worth $10
billion. The horror.
The horror, right? But like everyone's got their number. No one wants to lose 90% of their wealth. But if his entire wealth is based on the stock of this company he used to own or work for, he can't control that anymore. And he can't control the stock market. And all these wealthy people today are like, wait a minute. Something not right. Something's not. Even the rich people are like, yo, what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're looking for an exit. They're looking for escapes. They can't buy. Jeff Bezos can't buy $10 billion worth of real estate. He can't buy $10 billion worth of land tomorrow. But he can buy $10 billion worth of Bitcoin. And the easiest way for him to do it is through the ETF.
Yeah. So you don't think he would take that extra step to pull his money out of the bank?
You can go the ETF route, but if you buy the ETF, technically your money is still in the bank. People think, oh, I'm buying the Bitcoin ETF, so I'm diversified or whatever. Maybe they don't even understand the difference. But fundamentally, you're still in the fiat system if you own the ETF.
Yes, I understand that. I'm saying
he's not going to have a cold card wallet.
Why not?
Because it's $10 billion.
Yeah, he couldn't hold it with Unchained.
I'm sure Unchained would figure something out for him if he wanted to do that. My point is that he can't buy $10 billion of Bitcoin from Unchained.
Yeah.
They can't produce that kind of liquidity. The people that have billions of dollars, they are actually hampered. There are very few places that they can buy $1 billion worth of Bitcoin like that. When you were asking, what are they going to do with all this Bitcoin? They're going to sell it to people like Jeff Bezos. They're going to sell it to countries like Saudi Arabia and Qatar, who are allegedly announcing something Bitcoin related this year, right? When they have all that Bitcoin, they'll sell it to somebody who wants to drop $1 trillion, maybe. But if you actually understand what Bitcoin is, why would I accept your $1 trillion?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
That's the game. They've got retail buying the ETF, which gives them the funds to buy the Bitcoin. Right now, fundamentally, they're buying all the Bitcoin from GBTC because GBTC is selling every day. And then, you know, it's like a wash trade. If you understand what Bitcoin is, there's nothing you would sell it for. So basically, Saylor got 1%. He's not getting to 2%. The ETFs are at 4 or 5%. They're not getting to 10%. So who's the next big guy coming in behind them? They're not going to get 1%. They're not. That's just out of the question now. What they're doing is basically signaling to the world, this is the new game. Play it if you want. If you actually understand what Bitcoin is, this is the new game. And there's people, countries, you know, governments, companies, they're not there yet. So when they finally wake up, and I think Saylor is definitely showing a lot of these CEOs, like, how do you become the most talked about CEO in the world?
Right.
You just buy Bitcoin? That's all you did? He's like, well, we did a lot of homework to figure out how to buy the Bitcoin, but fundamentally, yeah, you just buy the Bitcoin.
And you, what do you mean homework to how to buy the Bitcoin because it's such a large amount?
I mean, it's a company. They got to do paperwork. They got to hold it a certain way.
Okay.
They
got
to,
okay.
You know, they can't just put it on a cold card on Michael Saylor's desk, right?
Got
like,
it.
There's things they got to do. Mm-hmm. But fundamentally, like, at the end of the day, once you did all that homework, then you just buy the Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
So Michael Saylor did all the homework that nobody else wanted to do, and that's why he gets 1%. If Jeff Bezos had done the homework, Amazon could have bought 1% of all the Bitcoin, and then we'd all be talking about Bezos. So, like, the name of the game is who understands Bitcoin. And the only way you prove that you understand it is like, well, when I figured it out, I pushed in everything I had.
And then I logged into Noster and talked about it.
And then I logged into Noster and talked about it. So to close that out with like tying it back to your Bitcoin journey and your retirement account, Michael Saylor is doing exactly what you're doing, just at a corporate scale. You're having heartburn and whatever, trying to set up your own personal account. He didn't even have Unchained to call. To get like,
I'm sure he had people he called.
No, this is the point. Is
or that a legal team.
But this is the point, is that everyone's struggling. Mm-hmm. And so when the ETFs come in, it goes, we did all that thinking for you. You just give us money.
Yeah.
You can do it the hard way or you can do it the easy way, man. And everyone goes, I'll take the easy way, because they just want to report the gain. They don't actually, they won't care about the fundamentals of Bitcoin until the event happens where they realize they don't have the Bitcoin. But anyway, I digress.
Tangent King.
Yep.
Come to the dark side. Come to the dark side, baby.
Give me that crown.
Look, there is nothing wrong with the conversation going where it wants to. You had a lot of opinions about this whole retirement move. You've been waiting a long time for it.
Yeah, you know. Well, here's the thing. I don't think you think that you're gonna retire.
Ooh.
Like, you don't talk about it as like a thing that's like possible.
Yeah, wait, let's break that down after this break. Hey, it's Mandana. We're in season 3, The Halving, and I'm making sure we drop a new episode every week. We are dreaming big for flirting with Bitcoin, and the only thing standing in our way is time and money. Let me be transparent and talk real numbers. Through Value for Value, our listeners directly paid us 100,000 sats in season 1. Season 2, we made 1 million sats. Of course, now we gotta see if we can 10x again and reach 10 million sats this season. Hashtag relationship goals. If we earn 10 million sats from the work we put into this podcast, it'll be the sign that one of us can do this part-time, maybe even full-time. Send us Bitcoin or shop our merch store. It all helps with the goal. You can also give us an old school shout out on social, listen to us on your favorite podcasting 2.0 app, or make and share clips of the show. Your support in any form is value we appreciate. Go to flirtingwithbitcoin.com/support and let's experience Value for Value together. So that felt like a confrontation, babe.
With whom?
You're like, you don't think you're gonna retire.
No, I don't. I think you have put in your mind that retirement is something that happens at a later stage of your life. And I would argue that I used to think that also, even though I was working towards speeding that up. Bitcoin makes you see it. And it's going to happen fast.
So you're saying that a lot lately, but you used to not say that. Like a year ago this time, you were not talking this way.
Well, I have data now.
Oh, really? So your mind has changed.
I have more data.
I don't feel like you had officially said, like, I know I used to say 5, 10, 20, maybe 30 years, but now it's like, what, this year? Is that what you're saying?
Not particularly this year. What I'm saying is
watch him backtrack now.
Not backtracking. Every time. What I'm saying is that we know because of math that Bitcoin is going to appreciate. It doesn't matter what you want to appreciate it against. We know that it is going to appreciate. What we don't know is the rate of change. Right?
Yeah, I understand that. And, you know, it's not like necessarily fair to you for me to be like checking in on your conviction. And your conviction is constantly changing, right? And you're also not wanting to make false promises to your wife. I understand all of those things. But yeah, I can't help it. I can't help being like, well, Ian said, not yet. Ian said maybe in this time, you know, I can't help it. Yeah, it's hard for me to not think of something that you've said and to cling to that maybe as being true. Maybe in 5 years, maybe in 10 years. Maybe in 2 years. When you say those things to me, it sticks in my brain.
Okay, so I get that, which is why I always like couch my statements, mm-hmm. right? Okay,
I know you do.
But we have data now, right? We have the ETFs. We have actual data. We see how much the remaining Bitcoin is being gobbled up, like how fast that's happening. It's happening a lot faster than I predicted.
Really?
These ETFs are the most performant ETFs that have ever been created. Mm. Money is pouring into these Bitcoin ETFs. They've never seen this before. This has never happened before.
Interesting.
It took other ETFs years to get to the amount that these Bitcoin ETFs are at.
And the news isn't like really highlighting this, right?
Oh, they're talking. This is what they're talking about.
What, you know, why are people pouring so much money in?
It's not the why. They're talking about how this thing is performing.
Mm-hmm.
Every day now, they're talking about what were the inflows, what were the outflows of the Bitcoin ETFs.
Mm.
This is the talking point. Remember when I said all the FUD is over? It's because now these people have to acknowledge it's financial data.
It's real data, yeah.
It's real. It's in their world.
I wonder if this will like shift my mind in any way.
So
if the actual like mainstream media is now like speaking positively about Bitcoin.
It's not that they're speaking positively about it. It's that
there's data being reported that it's performing well.
It's more than, I mean, that's true. But the point is that they are talking heads for the financial world. Fundamentally, people tune into those programs to find out what's the best performing thing in the world. Jim Cramer, for example, his whole show is about buy this, sell that, and you're going to be wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anybody who's told you to sell Bitcoin in the last 15 years was always wrong. They can't say that anymore because up until the ETFs, it was like, well, how much can we trust this Bitcoin market? Now it's the money going into BlackRock, the guy that owns all of you. What's going on with these ETFs? Oh, they're the best performing ETFs that have ever existed. You can't say it any other way. That's what they're dealing with. That's what they're grappling with. They would like to say something's performing better. They would like to say sell these ETFs because it might not ever go higher than this and buy Apple or Google or Facebook or whatever thing they've been pushing for the last 20 years. None of that is valid. It's all underperforming Bitcoin.
So are other stocks suffering because of this?
The entire stock market is basically falling over right now.
Because of this?
Well, I don't believe that it's because of this, but I think they're going to blame Bitcoin for what's happening to the stock market.
Mm.
They're going to say, oh, everyone sold their stocks and bought Bitcoin. That's why the stock market crashed.
Okay.
Quote me on that. They're going to say that.
All right. So why is the stock market really crashing? If it's not that everyone's pulling it into Bitcoin.
It's not that the stock market is crashing. It's that money is being allocated to the most optimal place.
Yes. But so you are saying that it is because of Bitcoin. Bitcoin is causing the shift.
It's causing a shift. It's not crashing the market.
Okay, okay.
This is my point, is that we're going to see a correction in both. We know from the last 20 years that we keep having these financial situations, right?
Entanglements.
Yeah, entanglements, right? Okay. And every time we have one of these entanglements, stock market crashes, but for some reason it comes back bigger and better than the last time. What's going to happen with the next one, whenever it happens, is that everything's going to crash, but no one's going to sell their Bitcoin. Because you sell everything except your winners. And Bitcoin has been winning every year for the last 15 years. Nothing has outperformed Bitcoin any year for the last 15 years. So when everyone is selling, the Bitcoiners are just not selling. Why would I sell it? I didn't buy it to sell it. I don't have it to sell it. So
it's interesting. You're saying all of this. Are you confident that it's not going to go low again, crash?
Oh, no. Bitcoiners know that it's going to crash. We don't sell when it goes low either.
Yeah.
Right?
That's Do you think it's going to go low again?
Again.
With all of this money that's poured in, who would be selling?
It won't necessarily be selling. Everyone is selling. What'll happen is, again, some external event, something that people will think the sky is falling or whatever. Maybe the sky is actually falling. Who knows? The difference between Bitcoin and all those other things is that normally when the stock market crashes, someone turns the lights off and goes, whoa, 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 guys, don't actually find the price of everything, right? Like, let's take a breather. So if the price of Bitcoin is falling, that's a legitimate market price. Now, maybe someone's trying to push the price lower, but there's no one that can turn the market off if it goes too low. So will it go lower? Yes. Will it go higher? Yes. Will the lows always be higher? Probably. Will the highs always be higher? Probably. Fundamentally, Bitcoin is just trending up. If you care about those dips, sure. But if you don't care about the dips, you know that.
Won't I need to care about the dips if I'm retired?
This is where getting through like two or three halvings will totally change that question. You wouldn't even ask that question. You haven't been through one halving.
No, I haven't.
So think about the people that watched it go from $1 to $100. A lot of them sold, right? But if your bank account, I don't even need to say how much is in your retirement account. If your retirement account 100x'd in 2 years, would you really be asking me, do I need to worry about if it's going to dip again?
So it's going to 100x in 2 years?
I'm not saying that.
See, when you say those things, that's going to be my follow-up question.
No. The point is that Bitcoin is not like the fiat system.
Look, I agree with everything that you're saying. It just is hard for my brain to, or maybe it's hard for my heart to accept it.
Right. So you need to actually see it happen.
Yeah.
Which is why I said you need to get like 2-3 halvings under your belt.
So maybe in 5 years?
Yeah. Sure. 5 years.
Okay.
The longer you're in it, you build that conviction. And with that conviction, you're just waiting for more data to know the slope of this thing. That's it.
I think that's where I am.
And so the data that I'm trying to present today is that the ETFs are the best performing asset that the financial markets have ever seen. What do you think that's going to do to this thing that you fundamentally know, like the scarcity and all the other those things about Bitcoin? So as that world is only looking for the best thing, and then they eventually find the best thing, which will be Bitcoin, and everyone comes flooding in, they have to sell something to buy that. So what are they going to sell? It'll be everything else. They'll sell stocks. They'll sell houses. They'll sell land. They'll sell cars. They'll sell all that stuff that they've been sitting on, because that's what they hold their wealth in.
Are we going to buy a used boat? A used yacht?
I don't know, man. Maybe.
I mean, they sound like they're about to go on sale.
Maybe. I don't know. Who's going to buy it, though? That's the thing. If everyone figures it out at the exact same time, which is impossible.
I would do a yacht renting company, because people aren't going to want to own. They're going to want to rent. And that's where I come in. Or I could just buy Bitcoin.
So you're yacht B&B now?
Exactly. There's definitely bad market news, for it.
Bad news already exists.
It does, but not. I'm going to have like Jeff Bezos's like really legendary, humongous out with like a helipad. I don't know if that's true. I'm just making it up, but I'm sure it's true. Multi-story helipad, jacuzzi, tennis courts. You could rent that for, I don't know, 100,000 satoshis an hour.
I mean, I'd rent that today.
Today you would, but yeah, not when I'm doing it. Okay. You won't be able to afford it, baby. Okay.
So you're just looking for more data. And the data says that the Bitcoin ETFs are the best performing thing. Everyone who's looking for performance is going to come piling into it. And as they come piling into it, it's going to perform better, which is going to get more people's attention. They're going to pile into it, right? It's going to be this massive pile on. And at the same time, there's going to be a crash because they have to sell something. They have to convert something into Bitcoin. And so the people that own everything today, they want to hold on to that stuff. Even they have to buy some Bitcoin because otherwise the Bitcoiners will just buy it from them. Unless they refuse to sell.
Sell what?
Land. That's probably a good one, right? You can have your land, right? Maybe you got like 100 acres, 1,000 acres or whatever. Today, that'd be a couple hundred Bitcoin maybe, depending on where the land is, right? Mm-hmm. Bitcoin, the asset, will appreciate faster than that land. So when that Bitcoiner actually wants that land, they'll be able to name a price.
Oh, I thought Bitcoiners were getting violent. No.
Okay. It's just that
it's still friendly. It's a business transaction.
If you don't
convert
some of these things that you're sitting on into Bitcoin, the Bitcoin will appreciate faster than the thing you're sitting on. And thus you will eventually, again, unless you refuse to sell, which is an option, but eventually someone will come to you and offer you a whole Bitcoin when it's worth, you know, tens or hundreds of millions of dollars, whatever we're going to be using as currency then, basically 100 million Satoshis. For your land. And you're going to be like, you're crazy. And they're going to be like, yeah, but my grandpa got these when he mined Bitcoin on his like laptop in college. So this is like nothing to us. This is where he wants to be buried.
Is this you?
No, I'm just saying.
Is this our
like,
grandchild?
No, I'm just saying.
Oh, no,
like,
we don't have, you know, Bitcoin from your mining days in college. You didn't even go to college. But I was gripped by that story.
So that's my point is like, that's what's going to happen. So if that guy that has that 100 acres or 1,000 acres wants to hold on to it, he needs to have some Bitcoin. Otherwise, he's not going to have it forever.
Look, you're preaching to the choir on this stuff. I don't know what you're trying to convince me of.
Well, what I was saying is that the financial world is all paying attention to it now. When you say you need more data, I'm showing you everybody who's interested in making money is now looking at Bitcoin.
I mean, did I say I need more data?
No, you said that's where you're at. And I said,
yeah, I mean, I'm just looking. I honestly don't know what else I should be doing. I'll move my retirement over. But like with my retirement fund, I told you I was very set it and forget it. And I would like to be set it and forget it about this. And so I feel like I'm as in as I'm going to be in. Like I believe in Bitcoin. I do, but I don't think I'm a Bitcoiner.
I think as you are actually in it by moving your retirement account into it, I think you will actually change.
As a person?
Yeah.
How?
I think that for one thing, like this idea of retirement will become more clear. And I think then you'll actually know what you want to do if you don't have to work for other people, because you'll have to sit and think about
it. Anything.
You have to do something. And it doesn't have to be a job is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. It's like when you are financially free, and what you choose to do with your time is purely your choice, then you will see, oh, that's what I actually want to do.
Yeah, I totally hear you on that. So that's what you want to see me do and that I'm a Bitcoiner?
I'm not. I don't get to say that you are. I just get to say when I don't think that you're thinking about.
Interesting. Because you've told me before that I'm not a Bitcoiner.
Because you don't, you say things that let me know that you're not thinking about Bitcoin in the way that you actually believe that this thing is going to give you all your time back. Right? You still think your time is going to be occupied by other things and other people.
Because I don't know when the change is going to happen. And so I don't want to live in my life in a way to be like, man, in 5 years, I'm done with all of this. And then fast forward 10 years and I'm still like logging into work.
Okay. We're going to talk in circles on this, so I'm going to cut the circle. I understand why you're saying that. All I'm saying is that I think the appreciation of Bitcoin over the next 2 to 4 years, you will have no choice but to change how you think about it. Hey gang, it's Ian. Let's chat for a second. Bitcoiner or not, I know we're all feeling anxious to save more money lately. But do you want to know why you're feeling that way? It's because you're still thinking in fiat. Seeing the price of everything go up in your local currency, that's what's driving you crazy. That's where all this anxiety is coming from. Meanwhile, the reality is everything is actually getting cheaper on Bitcoin Island. And you might ask yourself, how do I get to Bitcoin Island? Simple. Bitcoin Island is just a state of mind, and you need to train your brain to think in Bitcoin. Your first training exercise is to set a Bitcoin goal using the Satoshi Savings Calculator made by yours truly. And your goal should be to always have more Bitcoin today than you did yesterday. It's literally that simple. This way, the amount of Bitcoin you have only goes up. And once you start to think in Bitcoin, over time, everything around you becomes cheaper. You'll be way more confident about the future. No more anxiety. Look, we don't need to overcomplicate this. You're still early, but you gotta be strategic. And you gotta unlearn everything they taught you about money. So go to flirtingwithbitcoin.com and train your brain to think in Bitcoin with the Satoshi Savings Calculator. So hiccups aside, you've started the process. Are you excited about this? What, like, to be done?
I am looking forward to how, like, clean and simple it'll all be when it's done. Like, all my stuff's in Bitcoin. That's the only thing I have to think about. That I am definitely looking forward to.
As opposed to what?
The different funds that my money was in.
Ah, yeah. That's how they get you.
Exactly. It's spread all over the place.
You don't even know where your money actually is.
I mean, oh, you're right. I don't, but I will.
But you will.
I will. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. And it's interesting, like, but you got to diversify. And I'm like, why? It's so confusing. Like, let me live. I've made my decision. I want it all in one thing. And everyone says that stupid phrase, like, well, you shouldn't put all your eggs in one basket.
I only brought one basket.
Yeah, what? I don't know. How many baskets are you holding when you're walking? That is endangering your eggs.
So you put an egg in your pocket, an egg in your back pocket.
It's just
you hold
really
an egg in your
weird.
Hand and egg, one yeah. egg in the basket. Yeah.
I mean, I get it. I get that that's the reaction, but I'm just like, no, I'm good. I feel really confident in the decision. But yeah, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm being naive. I don't think it's that much of a risk.
Looking pretty solid so far.
But I wasn't like having this really strong conviction for like the different funds that I elected. So maybe that's also why. I assume if you're very invested, like, I guess pun intended, in how you invest your money, and you've done a lot of research and you've done strategy and you've made decisions that you know, I don't know, maybe it's a hard decision. But for me, I was like, I don't even know where this was going. So yeah, let's put it in something I understand.
They got a lot of people thinking that way.
It's
almost like it was planned.
Yeah, I completely believe that.
Having all your money in one place, the simplicity of that, does that make you feel more optimistic about the future?
Oh, no. I would say that those are two separate things. So I think that at minimum, Bitcoin is going to protect me from inflation.
Why do you think that?
Because of data, math, as Ian likes to say. I do think that it's going to do better than the dollar. I think where I'm not changing my behavior or thought is that Bitcoin's going to make me rich, wealthy, beyond my dreams. Like, I don't know. I have no idea about that. And I think thinking about it or thinking that it would be a reality is not helpful for me. Maybe you think it would be. You know, I would make different decisions, but I don't know.
So nothing life-changing yet.
No, nothing life-changing yet, but I don't worry about money. And I'm sure other people are very, very worried about money. So that's probably life-changing, right? Which goes with like the inflation piece of it. I feel like we're making a good decision on where to put our money. and I'm confident in that decision. It's a very informed decision. Do I think it's like the 100% best decision? No one else is going to like top this decision. I don't know. But I'm really happy that like you learned about this and then I learned about this, and we are doing things to make sure that our families and friends kind of have some or understand it.
Yeah.
I think I'm doing more than most Bitcoiners, actually.
In what way?
Trying to orange pill a bunch of people while I'm also being orange pilled.
I mean, you do have a podcast.
Yes, exactly.
You are giving up your time at night to to put in the work, as they say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like this weird space that I'm in where like I'm flirting with Bitcoin, but then I'm also the host of Flirting with Bitcoin.
It's so meta.
It's so meta. It's so hard being me.
Your words, not mine.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's lovely. I get to do a podcast with my husband. But yeah, like Bitcoin's around me a lot. It's around me a lot. More than I would assume another non-Bitcoiner. So maybe I am a Bitcoiner.
Does that make me Persian?
Yes. Is that that's your culture, Bitcoin? I said Persian. Your culture is a Bitcoin and my culture is Persian.
Oh, no, I wouldn't say my culture is Bitcoin. I'm just, I feel like you're around Bitcoin as much as I'm around Persia.
We're keeping that in.
Cool.
Yes. Yeah. Ian actually lives in Iran. Poor guy. He's surrounded by like Farsi all day long, Persian music, Persian food. That Persian food's the good part. Music's good too.
I mean, that wasn't the best kebab the other day.
It wasn't, you know. Yep. Marry an Iranian woman and you will be the pickiest kebab eater.
I mean, I just don't think it was good regardless. Like, I've had better kebab, but I've had better hamburger also.
Yeah, that's true. But there were some other things in there where it was like, this is all right. But my parents, theirs slaps.
As you just said, you know, you're flirting with Bitcoin and it's been going on for 2 years now. What would you say, like, is the thing that you like try to tell people first? I think we've talked about this before, but like,
oh, 2 years in, where's, what's my go-to?
Yeah, like, what's your, like...
That's a good question. I mean, I think I'm still not there. Very recently, I had a conversation with someone who kind of brought it up themselves. And I think they did. I really tried to explain it to them, the halving and the price. And then I said, you really need to look into this because... I told her, I said, you know, Ian thinks that we'll be able to retire sooner than later because of it. The reality is that the wealthy class is just learning about it. So very soon we're going to be priced out. You know, I just wanted to like present some type of urgency. I try to be calm in the conversation, obviously, but I always try to like instill some urgency in the situation because I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. Also, this person definitely did not understand what a Satoshi was. And I feel like that piece of it was really hard for me to explain, and I was very surprised by it. Oftentimes people are just like, yeah, okay, and the conversation keeps going. She is really good at saying when she doesn't understand something, like she'll admit it, you know? And then I was like, man, do most people not understand what a Satoshi is? Probably. That's probably where you lose a ton of people with that conversation.
Yeah, this is something that I think is going to change in the next 4 years. I think we talked about this on the pod last year for sure, but I think you're going to not see Bitcoin priced at one Bitcoin.
Mm.
I think you're going to see Bitcoin priced in Satoshis. Once we get to $1 million for one Bitcoin, one Satoshi is one penny. And in a weird way, that's like a stock split because then everyone now has unit bias and they can do the math and say, oh, I'll buy a dollar's worth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when we hit $1 million, they'll start pricing.
And that's in the next 4 years, sir?
After we cross 500,000, people are going to start talking about what do we do at $1 million.
Mm.
The guy who I think makes the block clock,
mm-hmm.
he already put out like, hey, how do you guys want to display 1 million on the block clock?
This guy.
Or 100,000. But he's like, it's for 100,000. He's like, okay, how do you want to display 100,000 on the block clock?
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, how do you want to display 1 million will be a question.
We won't care about the smaller numbers.
So I think that's what's going to happen. And when that happens, I think a lot more people will understand Bitcoin.
you know, I just feel like you're a little too calm about it. That's the case.
A lot of people lost money in crypto. And fundamentally, crypto has fractions, you know, also hundreds of millions of decimal points or whatever. Also, you sell fractions of all those things. So like people understand it. It's just that all those things were usually like $1 to $5.
Yeah.
So with Bitcoin being at like $100,000, people are just like, well, that's not obtainable.
Yes. And I kept trying to explain, you don't need one Bitcoin. You can buy $10 in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kept, the converting concept. But yeah, it's like that basic piece of it. If people don't understand, like, oof, it's a hard conversation. I'm trying, but at the same time, you have to wonder, you know, can that person figure it out enough on their own? And then also, like, just listen to my podcast. But, you know, I don't know if our podcast is that easy to just jump into anymore. It definitely was the first year. But if you don't know anything about Bitcoin, you know, maybe this is even a little over their head.
Maybe. But go listen to the first, like, 10 or 20. They're all, like, 15 minutes long.
True that. Like, if you are new to the pod, just listen. They're so short. We're so cute and inexperienced. And Ian really does lay it out really well what Bitcoin is and the different main pillars. Yeah. Yeah, orange pillars of Bitcoin. Yeah, it's not that complicated, but it totally is. But flirting with Bitcoin made it easy for people to understand. It made it easy for me to understand. If there's one thing I can tell you is I get it. I get it. I understand all of it. I've connected the dots. I see it. I believe that it's all going to eventually come together. I just don't know when and how. And I am very curious to see how people will try to stop it.
They're going to try every trick in the book.
All right, it's time for Satoshi for Your Thoughts, where I ask you a question that you've never heard before, and you have to answer raw, unfiltered, like real Ian Reese reaction.
Okay.
How bad do you want to say I told you so to someone who laughed in your face about Bitcoin right now?
Well, technically no one's laughed in my face, so there's that. Again, it's not a I told you so thing. So I personally, I don't think I'm at the I told you so stage. I think people that bought it at like $1 at the I told you so stage, right? But I do think that like people want to feel like they figured something out. And this thing is just hard to understand.
Do you feel like you figured it out?
I feel like I figured out enough that there's no going back.
Are you going to have a chip on your shoulder about this?
About what?
Just about Bitcoin with people that we've talked to about it. You know, I kind of wonder too. I don't feel that way right now. I don't. But I mean, it's hit 70 how many times now?
Yeah. Okay. But my point is, okay. So I don't think we're at the point of I told you so. Because I have not, for the most part, been trying to orange pill people on the price.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people in like the earlier cycles were more focused on the price. And it did. Like it went from $1 to $100 to $1,000 to $10,000 in like 8 years. So like that was mainly a price phenomenon. The technology is like, it is what it is. And no one understood the tech.
Mm-hmm.
What I've been trying to orange pill people on is the tech. I've been trying to convince my technical friends about the technical aspects of Bitcoin, the problems that it solves, and if it solves that problem, what do you think that changes? And I don't think we're at the I told you so stage yet because they haven't actually seen those things happen. But they're happening, right?
Yeah, I guess I haven't really been setting up anyone in my life for them to really understand that it's about to pop. Maybe I need to start planting those seeds.
Well, I mean, there, a lot of things are going to happen, right? So purely on the ETF side, you're going to get price appreciation. But on the technical side, Jack Mahler said it the other day, they're about to launch Strike in Europe. And when they launch Strike in Europe...
I didn't know that. That's exciting.
It is and it isn't. It is because they've been out of Europe for a while. They're in like a bunch of African countries and they're not in Europe. Mm-hmm. The European Union just passed a law making unhosted wallets illegal, which just means self-custody cold storage. And so Strike is not that. They're not an exchange, but they're not a cold storage unhosted wallet.
Yeah, they use KYC.
They do. So Strike will be able to fill that role in Europe, even though they just passed that law. So I think that what you're going to see, Strike is going to get this massive bump of people in Europe. People in Europe are going to bring on a wealthier client base than most of the rest of the Bitcoin world for like apps and services. Mm-hmm. And then those people are going to start using these Bitcoin apps and services that have been sitting there for a while. And we're going to really find out like who built good stuff. When you start seeing, just use an extreme example, right? Like I'll use Strike. When you start seeing Strike sitting next to Visa in conversation, or sitting next to PayPal in conversation, or sitting next to Venmo in conversation, these are all words, Cash App, like these are all words that
people... Really, that's where Strike is going. Good for them.
Fundamentally, they have to go there.
Yeah.
Right? When Strike moves into that group, people are going to be like, wait, what's this Strike thing? Okay, Cash App to Strike, there's like no barrier. You can move your... Right? So like they're going to start asking the question of, well, why can't I do that over here? And it's going to make these existing services seem less cool, less tech, less, you know, I want the new hotness, right? All of a sudden, you're going to see all these Bitcoin companies start to be what's talked about. When that shift happens, to me and my cohort, that's going to be the I told you so moment. When all of these Bitcoin-centric companies are now, for lack of a better term, they're not there remotely there yet, but they're the cool Apple, Airbnb, Spotify.
That's interesting. I feel like my I told you so moment is going to be like when I retire.
You know, if this works the way that I think the Bitcoin price appreciation slope is going to go. Yeah. When I retire, I think everyone will have no choice but to believe me.
Yeah.
Like it won't. I don't have to tell you that it'll do this or do that for you, whatever. It's like I retired. Mm-hmm. What do you mean? I no longer wake up and deal with people's problems. I deal with my own problems.
Oh. My wife makes me problems for free.
I'm at the point now where I don't want to convince anybody, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just like, you'll see. It's not I told you so, it's you'll see. And it'll just be me living my life. That's it.
Yeah, that's what we can do. And like, again, maybe be a little bit more relaxed about the future than everyone else.
Yeah. And so like, I think this in a way goes back to why Bitcoin has this like religious overtone. Guys, don't get mad at me for this. I'm not trying to be offensive, but like, it's like techno-Mormonism. When I was growing up, all the Mormons were the ones that didn't do all the bad stuff, quote unquote. So Bitcoin is like, you don't do all the bad stuff, financial bad stuff.
Do you mean technology Mormonism? I thought you meant techno music. I was like, where is this going?
Oh, my God. Do you think techno feudalism means feudalism with techno?
No. But I swear I heard techno.
I said techno. Oh, gaze upon these gold plates in this hat.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway.
It's late, babe. It is late.
Techno.
You got to wrap this up.
Techno.
Mormonism.
Mormonism is just, you don't do these things, not because some God said so, but because you will lose your Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. If you ignore these things financially, you can just go live your life. And so that's kind of the message that the religions have all pushed is like, if you live this way, life will be better. If you live this way, financially life will be better. Like,
thank you, Brother Ian.
And that's why, like, I feel like the Bitcoiner like thing and getting religious-y is like, there's almost no way to get around it because religion at the end of the day is a way to think, and Bitcoining and being a Bitcoiner is just a different way to think.
Bitcoining.
Yeah, Bitcoining. Like, you know, mining the Bitcoin, running the nodes.
Just being on the Bitcoin vibe.
Yeah.
I feel like that's always what Bitcoiners are going to run into, like being compared to religion or cult or a scam or a pyramid scheme, because that's just how good ideas are manipulated.
The only difference between all of those things and Bitcoin is that even if Satoshi Nakamoto did pop up tomorrow, could prove it was him, signed a message that he controlled the 1 million coins that are sitting there that allegedly he controls, he couldn't do anything. He's still equal amongst us. And I think that's what separates this idea from previous ideas, mm-hmm. is that there's always someone you have to defer to at the end of the day. And in this scenario, it's like, well, even if the dude shows up again, like, yes, people will care what he has to say, but he can't like sit down and start coding and be like, actually, it's 24. Like, couldn't do it.
You know, shout out again to the first 10 episodes of the Flirting with Bitcoin podcast, because, yeah, when I was like, who invented Bitcoin? You explained it really well to where I trusted it more. Whereas I think a lot of times where people are like, what do you mean you don't know who invented it? Like, they just decide like, oh, that's the hole. That's the hole in all of this. But yeah, it just goes back to like, there's just a lot you got to know to trust it.
Yeah. And there's a historical example, and I'll leave it here. The Roman Empire at one point was not Christian. Emperor of Rome became a Christian. And then in the history books, they're like, yeah. And then all of the Roman Empire became Christian. Really? Like, just like that. Everyone was like, oh, yeah, that the way that we were all thinking before, just because you changed the way that you thought, mm-hmm. we all are going to change. No, that didn't happen. Right now, there's no Bitcoiner in charge of, like, besides El Salvador, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Bukele's in charge. But he's not the empire. He's just a small part inside of this, like, global empire. But the math says if empire keep empiring and El Salvador keeps El Salvadoring.
And Bitcoining,
right? Like, then there will be some parity at some point in the future. Either El Salvador catches up or the empire joins.
Thanks for listening to the show.
Now, let's get you set up on Fountain so you can start earning some money simply by listening to podcasts.
Go to fountain.fm to download the app.
Once your app is set up, search for Flirting with Bitcoin and hit follow.
Listen to our show and episodes from your other favorite podcasts to earn your first Satoshis, which are fractions of a Bitcoin.
And make sure to keep an eye out for our promoted episodes.
You can earn up to 100 Satoshis just for listening.
Pretty cool, huh?
You can use those sats you've earned to send us a boost, like a little payment with a message.
And I swear, we try to respond to everyone.
Every episode, we shout out the top boosters.
To support us or other podcasters with more sats, you can top up your Fountain wallet with a bank card or Lightning transfer from apps like Strike or Cash App.
The easiest way to learn is to get started.
Now, you're all set up for podcasting 2.0.